Oh, I'm here to separate the men from the boys. Watch out, men. Here comes the colonel.
Ooh. Where did she come from? Wow. Well, it's about time we got a little respect around here. Welcome back to the second half of The Promise of Tomorrow here on the Science News Radio Network. Exploring the business of emerging science, nanotechnology, open innovation, I'm your host. I'm Colonel Mason. In just a minute, we're going to get back with our guest today, Carlos Morón, the Investment and Trade Commissioner for Mexico. And we're going to ask him how long it's going to be before the Mexican government is finally able to put out of business those cutthroats that are on the border. And, of course, at the end of the program, listener comments and the voice of reason. This time, the voice of reason is Carlos Morón. And we also have, coming up in a little bit, a revisit from Dave McIntyre as we talk about border security. He's got some surprising revelations. But first, we're going to step over to the fountain of useless information we have here on the set to answer today's query.
Welcome to the fountain of useless information. How can I help you?
Okay, old spirit of the fountain, we have you now. And for today's query, tell us please, what automaker famously described history as bunk? Famous automaker said, history is bunk. Who was it?
I have given you my answer, and now you may tell
can't fool you. The famous automaker who once described history as bunk? None other than Henry Ford.
That's right.
Okay, now I'm eager to get back to our guest, Carlos Morón, Investment and Trade Commissioner for Mexico, located in Dallas, Texas. We caught up with him in Houston by phone. Well, with you being the Investment and Trade Commissioner located in Dallas, I can certainly believe that you have a keen interest in seeing that the safety along the border and the trade routes with Mexico, who is such an important trade partner of ours and of certainly of Texas, that they remain safe. Will there be will Calderon, President Calderon, be able to get control of these thugs along the border? And if so, how soon do you see it will happen?
Well, that's a very difficult question to answer in terms of time. I really believe that the strategy is working. I think that, again, most of those fights, it's regarding territorial control of these cartels. If you look at the amount of municipalities we have in Mexico, like counties here in the United States, 90% of these deaths have happened in less than 8% municipalities in all of Mexico. So also they're concentrated, most of these deaths are related to fights between these cartels, between these people that participate in these cartels. The very minor percentage, I would say, of these deaths that have been reported in the last 3 years, these 28,000 deaths, are individuals that were at the wrong place at the wrong time. I agree that that shouldn't even happen. One of those news, of course, is enough to have the reactions in the media and everywhere as we've seen, but I would say that the facts are very clear that the strategies are in place. For example, just give an example: Monterrey, which was recently 2 hours from the border, was recently in the first 3 months of the year, 4 months, was under serious fights between drug cartels there. The crime, the rate of crime has decreased dramatically in the last 3 or 4 months, every month. So again, it's not, I don't know when this is going to end. All I can say is that the Mexican federal government has a very clear strategy, and with the help of the United States, hopefully we can control this. Again, as I said, control it in terms of not becoming something that seems to be out of control. As you know, there's always going to be crimes always around the world in many different cities for different reasons. But definitely what Mexico would like to see is that the locally police forces would be able to control that with their own resources and being able to eliminate that that perception that this is a situation which is escalating.
Well, of course, we can say maybe that the Hartleys were in the wrong place at the wrong time by being over on the Mexican side of the border of that lake down on the Rio Grande, and that we can accept. But the Mexican police commander who investigated was decapitated and his head delivered. I mean, that's an intolerable situation for Mexico, for the government of Mexico. I mean, it's a real affront to the whole governing body of Mexico. Isn't President Calderon going to be forced to send the army in there and clean out that nest of cutthroats?
Well, you know, a lot of the security forces that have been deployed in those areas have a very clear mandate, and they work in coordination with the army and with the federal forces, security forces. Now, yes, those people that have been killed during the line of duty, it's very sad and it's very unfortunate, and President Calderon has recognized their bravery and the honor that which with their fighting these thugs. I believe that these people deserve all their families deserve all the recognition of what brave things they're doing for the country. Nevertheless, as I just mentioned before, the strategy is there. It's been deployed. It's in place, and hopefully, again, we see those rates, those indicators, falling and diminishing.
Well, Carlos, it's so good of you to be with us today, and I know it's an inconvenience because you're extremely busy, but you've covered some important points. The stuff that you've covered is very positive. I really do appreciate the insight that you've been able to give us, and I'm sure the listeners do too.
And I understand that some very valid questions and points that you have audience.
Well, Carlos Marone, the Investment and Trade Commissioner for Mexico, located in Dallas, Texas, you have been just a wonderful guest, generous with your time, very informative, wonderful insights. Thank you so much for being with us, and I would really appreciate it if you'd come back and visit us from time to time and update us on what's going on with Mexico.
Okay, thank you so much, Mr. Mason. I appreciate very much the time. We'll gladly participate again.
So with Carlos Marone being refreshingly candid on the question of security in Mexico and our own border security, we wanted to pose the question and clarify the United States view with Homeland Security Specialist David McIntyre. What's the answer to the Mexican problem?
that's a tremendous challenge. I think the best approach is let's try to break out what are the individual issues, because we tend to conflate them, and unfortunately there are people with agendas on sort of both sides of the argument, and they'll pick part of the argument and use that to leverage their agenda.
Mm-hmm.
Look, immigration is an issue. Certainly you can't be a nation if you can't control your own borders. And so you have to decide, how are we going to control them? Do we control them only on the border, which is a huge challenge? Only, by the way, on the southern border? Do we focus on the northern border as well? About a third of our current border patrol is focused up in the north. Are you going to worry about your seaports? Does the issue of border extend to your air land ports and your border and your seaports? Or do you consider the coastlines as well? It's a very complicated issue to try to stop immigration. Secondly, immigration issues really are driven by work opportunities in the United States, and so workplace enforcement is very, very critical. The current administration has said we have to prioritize workplace enforcement further down the list than enforcement against criminals. So I'm looking first to deport those people who have committed crimes. And then lastly, immigration's driven, it's maybe drawn to the United States, but it's driven out of Mexico and places south by lack of other opportunities. So is there some way we can engage internationally? Now, I've just given you one aspect of borders. Drugs, an entirely different issue. Hundreds of millions of dollars flowing across our border. Guns, a different issue. Pirated CDs, human trafficking, especially for sex. All of these are different issues, and unfortunately, we tend to conflate them.
So what you're saying is there's not one blueprint, there's not one answer, because each has to be dealt with in a different manner. Is legalizing drugs one way to put the cartels out of business, getting control of the drug supply?
I'd be very surprised if that worked. First, we have a whole series of sort of moral hazard issues with the United States, but if you just set that aside for a second and forget about right or wrong, let's just look at what has happened in other places. You have huge criminal enterprises that right now south of our border that actually have as a goal the control of their own country. Many of their politicians are already in the pocket of the drug cartels. Many of their police forces, you know, the army, the Mexican army, has a regular policy that when they move into an area, the first thing they do is surround the town and disarm the police, because so many of the police are in the pay of the cartels. So to think that they're simply going to give up and go away because we legalize drugs is a huge mistake. They simply change over. They change to kidnapping. They change to extortion. They change to some other type of crime. A second problem that we face is that there's a great book that addresses the problem of smuggling and makes the point that what we have south of the border is really an enterprise. They are an economic enterprise the way you would think of Walmart or some other big commercial enterprise. Mm-hmm. The cartels really, to some extent, don't care whether they are moving drugs or moving people or moving smuggled CDs or whatever. They're just moving a product. And they're very coordinated in the way they do that. On our side of the border, we're defended by a series of agencies. If what's coming across is drugs, then the DEA has the lead. If it's what's coming across is people, well, then immigration has the lead. If what's coming across is smuggled goods, then customs may have the lead. If what's coming across is terrorist threats, then the FBI has the lead. So on one side, you have a relatively unified, high-tech, high organization that has essentially unlimited amounts of money to spend. On the other side, you have these stovepipes that are we've inherited from the 19th and early 20th century that we're trying to coordinate bureaucracies. And you can just see that, you know, what's going to win, the 21st century or the 20th century solution? We got a real problem.
Well, Dave, the governor of Arizona and the governor of Texas have both said, well, gee whiz, securing our borders is a national obligation. It isn't the responsibility of the states. Which is it, responsibility of the states or national?
It absolutely is a responsibility of the national government. There's no question, and the Obama administration has made that very clear in filing suit against Arizona, which was trying to enforce immigration laws within its own state. So they've made very clear that they own the responsibility. The problem, of course, is that it doesn't have enough resources, and sometimes in the past, let's just be honest, hasn't had the enthusiasm that it needs. So let me tell you one other thing that bothers me seriously. On the border issue now is only one subset of Homeland Security issues. What bothers me the most is that you can't tell me that 100 million or 150 million or 200, I'm sorry, billion, who knows the actual amount of drugs flowing one direction and money flowing the other direction. But take a round figure of $100 billion. You can't tell me $100 billion worth of product is crossing this border and nobody saw anything. So somebody saw something. What I'm suggesting to you is that the biggest problem with drugs is not the drugs. It's the official corruption that always follows such a huge amount of money. Mm-hmm. We're already seeing those kinds of issues. Very recently, we had a big piece in the Washington Post about customs officials who had been corrupted along the border and a sting that was set up. We know that something like 100 officials between California and Texas law enforcement officials have been indicted in the last year. We saw the recent FBI arrest of 89 police officers in Puerto Rico who were acting as couriers and security for drugs. We had a sheriff in the state of Texas who was arrested and convicted with 16 of his deputies for essentially handing over the intelligence products from the FBI on a daily basis to the cartels. We've got a serious public corruption problem below the surface of this $100 billion. So that's just one of many Homeland Security aspects that we're struggling through, and one of the many things we would teach in our curriculum.
So the problem with the Mexican border is economic, but with it being that porous, doesn't that also leave a real big hole for terrorists to get through also? And when you compare it to Canada, we don't seem to have the economic drive from the Canadian border as we do from the border with Mexico, but it could be porous too, and has shown even that it has been in some cases, I think, has it? Can you kind of give us a comparison of the two?
You know, Colonel, I'm more concerned about terrorist infiltration from the north than I am from the south.
Really?
While we see regularly movement of people across the border in the south,
mm-hmm.
and that's controlled by the cartels now. They have taken control of everything. They move the people now carry the drugs when they come across, so they sort of get a double bang for your buck.
Sure.
They're using tunnels. I'm sure you followed the stories recently about submersibles. We've had more than 50 that have been identified. There are probably hundreds created down in the size of a bus or two tour buses, stick only 18 inches out of the water, built down in Colombia and smuggling drugs. Actually, those submersibles are carrying the drugs to Mexico, and then they drop in the pipeline in Mexico and cross into the U.S. And so I understand why people are worried that couldn't a terrorist get in that pipeline and move forward? And the answer is yes, they probably could. We do have a problem along the southern border, what is regularly called OTM, other than Mexicans. And we have had hundreds of people. When you arrest people in San Antonio that speak only Chinese, clearly something went wrong with our border security.
I guess.
But Canada has always posed a unique problem. We have great relations. We work very tightly with the Canadian officials, the Royal Police up there, the Mounties. And yet, interestingly, Canada has long had a very open policy toward refugees from other countries.
Mm-hmm.
People that can't find asylum anywhere else in the world are regularly welcomed in Canada. In fact, for the last 10 or 15 years, we've had something of a problem in that when we lean on forward governments to run terrorist and hostile people out of their countries, frequently they flee to Canada because Canada has defined itself as such an open society.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that puts them right on our northern border. And in some places, the northern border is much easier to penetrate than the southern border because you're not crossing a big open desert.
Mm-hmm.
You're crossing in woods and mm-hmm. logging trails. So, yes, we certainly do have a problem in the north. We have the advantage of joint patrols with the Royal Canadian Mounted Police and so forth, but we don't have joint patrols in the south yet. But, you're right. We need to be concerned in the north as well as the south.
Well, I could imagine with all the woods and all that land line. I mean, that's an enormous border. And what are we doing? I mean, how are we securing that border? You say patrols and that sort of thing, but I don't see how that can be efficient enough to do much.
Well, you're not ever going to have a perfect security. It certainly is the case that anybody who's absolutely bound and determined could probably do enough reconnaissance to drive their car up, park it somewhere in the woods, and find a logging trail to cross. But we do have a real increased presence in the northern border. Remember, our border patrol has gone from fewer than 6,000 people just a half a dozen years ago to more than 20,000 today. So we have a lot more boots on the ground, and we have a lot more sophistication, technological sophistication than we used to. We have a lot more cooperation with the Canadians than we used to. They certainly see this as an important issue. Both the North and the South realize, countries both the North and the South realize, that if we had a major terrorist event in the United States that was traced back to a crossing across their border, it would have a tremendous impact on their economy because there would be a demand that we get a greater control over what's crossing at official crossing points. So they have a real vested interest in helping us out. One of the things that is most important that gets probably the least amount of press, because we're all focused on Border Patrol and four-wheel drives, is the intelligence that goes into this. And that has been, I think, of significant assistance to us in the northern area. Canada does have a pretty good reputation of being able to work within their immigrant communities and identify people who are threatened. This is an interesting point that's rarely raised. You know, most of the success that we've had in the United States for identifying terrorist cells has not necessarily been because somebody's tapping a phone. It's because somebody within that immigrant community stepped forward to law enforcement and said, hey, you know, there's a guy in my mosque, there's a guy in my work, there's a guy in my apartment building. The guy just talks crazy. He does all this insane stuff. I see him, he and a couple of buddies carrying suitcases into an apartment. They never carry anything out. Something's going on. It takes a very unusual society for immigrant communities to feel comfortable enough to step forward to law enforcement. Most of these people have come here from a place where you didn't talk to the police.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's a very interesting dynamic going on, especially, for example, in New York City, where it is immigrant communities that have to feel comfortable with law enforcement that provide our best information.
Of course, then we completely overlooked a guy like Nadal at the Army base that shot his comrades, and there were so many warning signs about that. So, being able to pick up on those things has got to be a very difficult task. Well, the music means we're out of time, but I want to thank you, David McIntyre, Homeland Security Specialist with the National Graduate School, as we talk border security with Carlos Moron, the Investment and Trade Commissioner for Mexico. And you're reminding us that our border with Canada is really a bigger threat to us than our border with Mexico. Thanks so much.
And now we make time for the Voice of Reason. Listener comments, ideas, and suggestions.
Your next year, we have a huge conference here related to renewable energy and sun power, how we're working very closely in securing energy along the border. Those are the things that I think are very, on the positive note, which are very interesting. Mexico and Texas have enjoyed a fantastic relationship, economic, social, community relationship, cultural relations over the years. We've had a good share of positive economic cycles, and we've suffered some downturns also. But we are very much correlated. We have GDPs that are very similar. We have complementary economies. We have great labor in both regions. And I believe that as we try harder to communicate better, to understand how we work, how we can work better, and how we can know each other better, we're going to keep building that trust that's needed in this relationship. Again, I think anything in life that you want to create and generate trust, you need to know and you need to learn to share with the other people, what are you doing, what are you trying to to make these relationships work better, all of those efforts. So I believe that in order to earn that trust, to develop more respect, and to develop more a better relationship, better understanding, I think there's great things going on between the state of Texas and the country of Mexico, particularly in the northeastern region of Mexico and the central part of Mexico. That would be my only comment, and we're working again to facilitate opportunities for any companies that would be interested in how to do business in Mexico. This is what we're here for. We're here to facilitate through a one-stop-shop approach. We're trying not to go for you to go through all these different agencies and ministries in Mexico to get the answers, the proper answers. We're trying to provide one set of comprehensive proposals to businesses that are legitimately interested in working closer in Mexico, selling Mexico, participating in trade, investing in Mexico, and so forth. Even companies from Mexico that want to also invest in Texas, create jobs in Texas. I think this is a bilateral relationship that we need to foster and work. And we'll work very, very, very closely with the different associations here in Dallas, with the state of Texas, to be able to, to try to capture those opportunities. I'm Carlos Marrón. I'm Senior Investment and Trade Commissioner for ProMexico, based out of Dallas. And our territory is basically mainly the state of Texas and other five states on the south central part of the region of the United States.
So you decide, has this really been the voice of reason? Listener comments are welcome at 214-329-4949. And please tell us your name and where you're from.
You've been listening to The Promise of Tomorrow with Colonel Mason, the definitive program on emerging and nanotechnologies, now archived and streamed on the web at promiseoftomorrow.biz. Join us next week at the same time as we learn more about the promise of tomorrow.
I am waiting for you.